taking you back, Frank. Let's go.
Only when the kumite is over.
Who the hell are these two scumbags?
Just stay out of it, pal. It's not your business, okay?
I ain't your pal, dickface.
I'll be in the airport in 2 days.
Welcome to the Divers Girl Movie Club. On today's show, we'll be discussing the martial arts documentary starring the Muscles from Brussels, Jean-Claude Van Damme, It's Bloodsport, released in 1988. I'm your host, Neil T, doing the splits in merry old England. And on today's show, I'm joined by Divers Girl Movie Club members, Todd Brisket in Austin, Texas.
To honor you means everything to me.
Jovial John in Virginia.
That hurts me just looking at it.
And from Rhode Island, it's Stephen Greenwell.
Aren't you a little young for full contact? Aren't you a little old for video games?
Kumite, 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 kumite,
kumite, kumite,
kumite. And now it's time for the feature everyone's talking about. It's Jackie's movie synopsis time. Take it away, Jackie.
Hi, guys. Bloodsport is the best gay softcore pornography movie I've ever seen that also features people punching each other in the face. It stars Jean-Claude Van Damme, some guy that he's in love with more than Leah Ayers, and then he beats up a bunch of Asian men. John really liked it.
I was going to ask you, John, because you're obviously a military man, and I know that the real Frank Dukes, or Ducks, he's well known for training people in the army. So I guess you watched it with one of your special military friends. Did you take notes? Is it like a documentary for you?
I did watch it. In my, you know, true to my art, I didn't take notes because why start now? It was just so amazingly great. I have to have watched this no less than a dozen times. Mm-hmm. I could go watch it again right now.
So do you watch it non-ironically or ironically? Is it, you know, because the action is obviously, it's real, isn't it?
Yeah, watching things ironically is a bit hipstery. That would not be something I would do.
Well, I mainly enjoyed it because of the stellar acting. Particularly the my favorite has to be the wife of his trainer, the woman at the beginning.
Oh,
she was amazing.
That old lady, man, she wanted to jump Jean-Claude's bones, man.
Yeah, I kind of got.
You see the way
as well.
You see the way when the first of all when he goes to her house to and he's looking in the window. You think he's looking at the sword, but he's watching her. And then when she slowly opens the door and smiles and winks at him,
yeah,
she wants that Jean-Claude action. And when he's getting the tea, pouring the tea for her blindfolded, oh, she loves it. She loves that.
Well, I mean, you really can't blame her though, can you? I mean, some of the low cut shirts that he wore, just showing off all the cleavage. I mean,
well, yeah, he did wear those low cut shirts, but his pants were like right up to his nipples.
On the subject of winking, I think he winked at the reporter girl, didn't he, in the bar? And did you notice he can't wink? He kind of twitched a bit, but wasn't able to wink, was he?
I mean, winking doesn't have anything to do with killing people, so he really didn't need to get good at that. So the first thing that was talked about during this was the hairstyles were pretty great. I think we ought to just take a moment and talk about the hair. JCVD's hair, I'm not sure what the shit was going on with that, but it was kind of like a strange, like straight up thing. And then it was like a pretty solid comb over, right?
I didn't think he looked horrible. Well, he kind of looked a bit dorky, didn't he, at the beginning? My favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme hair has to be Hard Target. Have you seen that one, John?
I have seen so many Van Damme movies, I can't differentiate between
it's the one
them.
There's like a sort of it's like, I don't know whether it's, I think it's set in New Orleans, and there's like the parade thingy, the what do they call that thing, the Mardi Gras.
And
they go into warehouse. You remember that? And he's got this huge mane of hair that's sort of all greased up, but it's all curly in the back. It's huge, like a like a sort of uber mullet. It's like a super mullet. It's amazing.
Yeah. I love the big hair. Like that is just wonderful. Like the reporter, like she has like small amounts of big hair, but it's still like nice big 80s, 90s hair. Mm. Love it.
Yeah. I think Hard Target is my favorite of, I haven't seen every JCVD film, but that is a really good one. His stunts in that are incredible. Like jumping over cars and kicking people through windows. I was really impressed with that one.
My brother just brought me over some movies, and I'm about to watch Derailed. So hopefully that's good.
Mm.
This is the type of movie that I love and Jackie hates, because there's all kinds of great action, fighting, like pretty wonderful. I thought the fighting was pretty decent, except for some of the blood spatter stuff. Like the guy will jump up in the air and do a kick and like miss by an inch or two, and then like the blood spatter will come out. Mm. Or my buddy pointed out, it was pretty funny. One of the times he kicks the guy and the guy goes the wrong direction, like he falls the wrong direction.
Yeah. And then, well, I mean, not only like the kicks and punches in this movie seem like one end of the spectrum or the other. Like they're either off by a foot, or some of those when Jean-Claude is fighting Chun-Li, they look like he's actually hitting him.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that one kick where he kicks him in the chest, looks like that was, you know, you can see his whole body jiggle. So it looks like he's actually kicking him.
Yeah, and the punch he does in the chest, which I think is meant to, that's where we're supposed to think, you know, he has to do the death touch to get into the tournament. Yeah. That was the death touch punch that he did to Chung Li's abs, which, as we all know, that's his weak spot. That was not a pulled punch. Like, he hit him pretty good there.
He's soft in the belly.
Neil, did you even watch this?
Who met you? Well, I was looking through my notes. I didn't actually make that many notes. I've got a ton of notes because I watched, there's a documentary called Put Up Your Dukes, which is all about the real Frank Dukes. So I watched that as well. And so I've got a fair few notes about that. But I did have one question for you, actually, John. If you went to the Kumite, what would your fighting style be, do you think?
I would be the, what do they call the guys who just get the ever-living piss knocked out of them? That would be my style.
I'm more of a capoeira guy.
Is that the wrestling to the ground one, TB?
The one where you hug him from behind?
Sorry, John, I interrupted you.
No, I would be a grappler. So I would try to get in as close as I could to people without them punching and kicking me, and then I would try to get down to the mat and fight from there.
I think mine would be the cheeky monkey. It's where I run around the ring dragging my knuckles and then I punch you in the balls.
Yeah.
Like that. Do you see that guy who did that?
Yeah.
That
made me laugh.
The overly racist character.
I didn't want to say mention his race, but he was kind of.
What would be racist about that, Teeb?
What would be racist about it?
He just
a fellow from the continent of Africa happened to be dark skinned, and they're having him run around and jump around like a monkey.
Mm.
Oh, yeah! I just thought he was very athletic.
Yeah. How about you, Steve? Do you have a fighting style?
First off, I will say we never find out that man is from Africa. Maybe he's from New Orleans or something.
Yeah, it's New Orleans. He's from the. Wearing the grass reed dress in New Orleans.
Oh yeah,
in the 1980s.
As far as fighting styles, I will say, early UFC actually would have like it would have like kung fu guys in it, and they kind of got knocked out.
Yeah, they
have
sumo wrestlers as well.
Yeah, they got knocked out of the sport because. After a couple of years, everyone realized, oh, wait, ground and pound is pretty much the only way you can win fights. So, like, it became the dominant fighting form in UFC because they realized, you know, movies like this, Bloodsport, were kind of full of shit. Like, you couldn't stand there and kick people in the face.
No, I did see an interview with a couple of the UFC guys, and I don't recognize them, but so I can't imagine they're that big. But they, a couple of them were saying they were very much inspired by Bloodsport, and they saw the sort of the opening the opening years of UFC being having a lot in common with that. I don't know how true that is.
Oh, definitely. Well, the early years of UFC, from what I've read on it, I didn't really watch back then. It did have a lot more different fighting styles, and those people all get the, like the Brazilian jiu-jitsu people get the crap beat out of them after a while because they couldn't match up. But also, I would imagine this probably inspired people to do that in the way that Rocky may have inspired people to box, even though Rocky is not really real boxing either. Like, they spit out 50 pounds of blood in every Rocky match. So
I would like the idea of a kumite, where you have different fighting styles come from all over the world, you know, top of their game, world champions from all different styles of fighting. And you have to match up. It's like a tournament. You match up against each other. But you are restricted to the rules of your own fighting style. And I think that would be something interesting to see. Like, if you're a wrestler, an American wrestler, not a professional, but an American one, you can only use like wrestling moves. You can't do any kicks or anything. And you have to go against a Muay Thai.
No locking hands, no chokes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so the other guy has to fight by his own styles rules. And you match up that
way. Hasn't that already been done? Isn't that called Street Fighter? Street Fighter 2?
I don't think Street Fighter 2 is a documentary, though.
They kind of do that, though, don't they? All have their own moves, and they're pretty restricted, don't they?
Like the guy from Japan can shoot fireballs.
Mm.
I definitely think when you look at Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat, they clearly took from this movie.
Yeah, Street Fighter for sure, because that's the whole idea. I mean, obviously in Street Fighter, there's no like strict fighting styles that they have. It's just punching and kicking. But each person is from a different area of the world, and they all have a stereotypical style that they that they use and look that they have.
Oh, definitely.
So, Neil, what would be your style then?
Cheeky monkey. I already explained it.
Oh, that's right. Cheeky monkey.
Cheeky
sorry.
Monkey. I run around the ring, dragging my knuckles, and then I punch you in the balls. Actually, I think that probably would work for me because I'd be too scared otherwise. I'd either run. I'd be the guy kind of sweeping the mat at the beginning there. That'd be me. That'd be my role, I think.
Well, obviously, from what we've learned, the best fighting style you could use or you can do is do the Johnny Cage splits nut punch. And that you can just do that in every single match and win. Unless you're fighting a woman. I don't know. Maybe a cooter punch might work.
Speaking of women and UFC, I don't follow the UFC, but wasn't there some kind of controversy about some fight recently where someone's got their arm nearly broken or something?
They break arms all the time.
Oh, do they? Oh, dear. Yeah. Sounds rough.
I don't think there's any controversy. Ronda Rousey took somebody out with a arm hold within 14 seconds or something. But
okay.
Ronda Rousey also...
There's any controversy about it.
She also broke the ribs of this this reporter guy who's like, you know, what do you say to your to your critics who say you're just a chick and you couldn't really take a dude down? And she's like, I could show you how to take a dude down. And he's like, all right. And then she threw him down and I think broke his ribs. That was kind of awesome.
Wow. And how do you feel now, Steve? You feeling better now? on the topic of like the real kind of moves, I don't know anything about this kind of fighting or any kind of fighting really, but it did seem sort of impractical for Jean-Claude Van Damme to kind of jump up in the air and do like, I don't know, is that a roundhouse kick where he goes all the way around? Like, he fairly does like 360 degrees. At that point, halfway through that, wouldn't he get punched in the balls or, you know, the other guy dodge out the way? Because, and he also did that about three times in a row, didn't he? A little bit predictable.
Well, maybe, but he was. What would it be like though if you got caught by the first kick? And I mean, you get kicked in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you get kicked in the face and then it's like, okay, here I am with my 100% awareness a millisecond later. You know what I mean? Like, you're probably a little bit stunned from having been kicked in the face.
Mm. That's true. He kept missing though, didn't he? It was like whoosh, missed, whoosh, and then he goes for a third time. I'm thinking, I'm not sure that's the best idea. Like, when I'm playing Street Fighter, I always try to mix it up a bit, you know, trying to fool those guys.
Yeah.
You got to toss a Shoryuken in there.
Shoryuken.
The one thing I really didn't like was the reporter basically having relations with him, and then the next minute being like, okay, well, you're my ticket in, and thanks for all the relations, but all of a sudden, I don't want you to be hurt, so I'm going to tattle on you. It's kind of like what in... I didn't like that at all.
Maybe she was probably too intimidated by his sexy bum that he kept showing off, right?
She's doing some of that gonzo journalism.
Mm. When he was peeling off his underpants, I was like, oh, Jesus, my eyes. He's Van damaged my eyes.
Oh, gee. He had a nice little bum there. A sweet little tuchus.
So we talked about the hair. We also talked about the fact that I'm pretty sure he had smaller underwear than she did.
Yeah. Well, she's wearing some of those 80s style granny pants.
They weren't that granny panty, I think is the point there. Like, jeez. That's a very secure man.
Mm. Well, at least we didn't have to see Mick Foley in his tighty underpants. That was Mick Foley, wasn't it? The other guy.
Oh yeah,
talking about Randy Jackson.
Is that his name? Wasn't he in the Jackson 5? Who's Randy Jackson?
That's a different Jackson.
Oh,
yeah, you're talking about Zangief.
Uh huh.
Zangief, yeah. Wasn't he this guy?
He's the American shithead who makes tricks with Brits.
I want to be that shithead.
Ray Jackson.
Oh, by the way, I read my kids a Dr. Seuss book the other day, and it had that rhyme
He's
in there.
He's the American shithead who makes tricks with bricks.
It's that's in that from rhyme? Fox and Socks. Yeah.
Oh, I knew I had heard that from somewhere. Speaking from somewhere, you know how sometimes you just see people, and like when you see their face, you're like, this person was destined for this thing, right? Whether it be like, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, a great example of this, but when I see Randy Jackson, I was like, the helmet or the hat with the two beers that you drink out of straws, was specifically made for him as a human being. Like, never has a product matched a person more than that.
For sure, yeah. He probably wore one when he was playing Ogre in all those nerd movies.
That is true. I brought that up also. But I have a question to pose to all of you. So I think from the laughs, we all believe that the helmet does fit him very well. Do you think if this was set in modern day, that with normal hair, he would still be that guy, or would he just be a completely different dude without a mullet?
Oh, it's a completely different guy. The mullet gives him his biker persona, biker type mentality, tough guy. You know, it's not only the mullet; it's the leather and the cut off shirts, the sleeves cut off. It's the whole package.
The whole Harley culture, whatever. Okay, so it needs to be there, mullet and all. You couldn't do a modern take with that,
right?
Okay, that's...
Well, I mean, those guys are still around. I mean, in modern day, the mullet guys with the Harley stuff.
Mm-hmm. They're fading fast.
Being taken over by the rice rockets.
Yeah. Oh, I did like... The other thing I did like was Van Damme was like, yeah, so this is not about the spectators. This is just about the fighters. And then, like, 5 seconds later, they're all, like, tossing money around, doing all these different bets. And it's like, yeah, right about for the love of the sport there, bud.
Speaking of their money, they have like full 8x11 size pieces of paper money, right?
Yeah, the
huge bills.
Little known fact: they just took Monopoly money and put it on the copier and did 2.5 size.
I assume those were like bidding tickets.
That's what I thought too. Yeah,
like tokens or something. Like they were probably buying shares of a fighter, and it pays off if that fighter wins, and if they don't win, well, then they're worthless, and that's why they're throwing them on the guy after he gets knocked out in one of the early fights.
Yeah, good point. I'm not a betting aficionado, so I wasn't aware of that. It seems like a good way to go instead of toss. I thought they always toss around money in these things, like in you know, the scenes in when they're all betting is taken directly from Deer Hunter, and I thought they all threw real money around in those kinds of scenes.
Mm,
but tickets, the betting, yeah, makes sense. Like a horse race, yeah.
my favorite scene from stuff like this is like any movie like this where you got guys just getting the piss beat out of them. My favorite thing for them to do is the dude like is either dead or like very close to dead, laying on the ground, bloody, unconscious, not moving, and some pissed off bettor like throws money down on them angrily. I always wonder to myself, like, what in the shit does that accomplish? Like, I am so pissed at you losing me money, I'm throwing more on you. And I'm not going to pick it up either.
It does seem weird in those kind of films that they're so cavalier about. It's still money. It's still good.
Exactly. And I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, which leaves me to my final thought. Things that don't make sense to me. Can anyone explain how in a training real world scenario, you need to have your nuts stretched and your arms and legs pulled to finally arrive at readiness? Because that was like, I understood all the rest of the stuff, but the old nut crush leg and arm pull, I didn't get.
Yeah, and Master Splinter had that all set up perfectly. Like, he had a pulley system and everything. So I don't think this might not have been for his training. This might have been for his own pleasure.
Okay, so this is one of those.
This is Master Splinter's sex swing. He's letting little Jean-Claude take a ride on it.
Okay, so it's kind of like a little S&M type stuff.
Yeah. 50 Shades of Van Damme.
Ooh. All right then.
Mm. So his trainer loves some Belgian waffles, right?
To that point, I think he was trying to increase Jean-Claude's pain tolerance so that he could, you know, focus on the fight and that kind of stuff. But they kind of do a poor job of explaining everything going on in this movie. So who knows? It could be for some other reason.
So we actually. When I came in the Marine Corps, we had just moved from, we had a thing called line training, which is basically like where, you know, you do all this kind of like combat stuff, but it is only combat focused and it's all like, you know, skull stomping and that kind of stuff. So they moved away from line training and they started something called MCMAP, Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. And one of the things they used to have us do that they don't have us do anymore is something called body hardening. So, like, I had to, with my shins, kick telephone poles and things of that nature, because the idea is that if I beat the shit out of myself enough, I would numb the nerves, and then it wouldn't hurt us. It wouldn't hurt as much.
Huh. Sounds sensible.
Ooh.
Yes. So.
Yeah, I don't know if that is a solid technique. Doesn't the pain exist for a reason to let you know if somebody is hitting you?
That's so cute that you're trying to make sense of this.
It does work though in a way, in that you will be numbed, but I'm not sure how much use
that
is.
If you're in a combat situation, the pain, you won't even feel the pain because you'll be pumped with adrenaline and everything.
Pain don't hurt.
Yeah, either way, I can tell you, I did not like kicking telephone poles.
with your shins, did you say? That doesn't make sense either.
Because if I would have kicked it with my knees, that it totally made sense.
Well, if you had boots on, maybe. I don't know. Man, that's pretty worse.
He's trying to harden his shins.
Yeah, but then what would it harden?
Yeah, but that, okay. It'd be a lot more practical if you just had shin guards on. I suppose you couldn't run around with shin guards. I don't know. I don't know what we're talking about.
Neil, they want it to hurt. That's the point.
Oh, okay.
Now, Neil, from your consternation, I get the feeling you did not like this movie.
Answer the question, Neil. I didn't make a lot of notes, and it was kind of, I don't know, I mean, I've seen quite a few Van Damme movies, and I quite like Universal Soldier. I thought it was a lot of fun, actually. And I saw the Twins one. What's that Twins one? Double Impact. I actually saw that in the cinema and fell asleep, which is probably not a good sign, really. But we talked about Hard Target earlier, and I loved Hard Target. I thought that was really well done. This one, I'm not really a fan of martial arts stuff, to be honest. And it was more kind of, I guess it was kind of a hipster ironic watching that it was pretty funny unintentionally. It's all right. I mean, you know, I don't know that there was that much to say about it sort of in terms of my commentary. In it's like, okay, here's Van Damme beating up a lot of people, and that's kind of it, really.
Mm-hmm. You better watch out. He is on your continent. He will find you.
Well, the funny thing is, this is your scathing review, and I'm just like nodding along, like, yep, yep, yep. That's why it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not
beating up people. Okay.
I think you paint me as a bit of a film snob, John. I like dumb movies as much as the next guy, but they got to be entertaining as well. It's like, okay, bunch of guys
punching
each other.
They have to be Neil's version of dumb, not someone else's.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, definitely throughout this movie, it's clear he has more chemistry, as Jackie said, with his Ray Jackson buddy, as opposed to the chick in this movie. And even at the end of the movie, you know, I love you, my friend, and he just leaves.
Anytime you need me, I will be there.
Oh,
with
yeah,
open arms.
And he just leaves Leah Ayers on the tarmac, just leaves her in Hong Kong.
By the way, in that scene you're talking about, anytime, anywhere, or whatever, like, I didn't realize this the first time. He almost kissed him in that scene. Anyone else catch that? I was like, hmm. So
this is like Brokeback Mountain in Hong Kong. These guys meet and they have a whirlwind relationship. They're opening up. They're discovering each other for 3 days. And then after the 3 days are over, they're now touring together, touring the world in kumatais and fighting and hugging each other all the time, practice their wrestling skills.
Yeah. But I'm not necessarily sure this is supposed to be homoerotic. I blame Leah Ayers because her usage of feminine wiles, subpar.
Well, she got to the Arabs.
Wow.
She was a bit kind of like, what's that? Is it April O'Neil in Turtles? Who's supposed to be kind of this, I don't know if she's supposed to be a sort of sex pot in the comics, but she's not exactly asexual.
No, she's not.
But you know, this one in this movie, this report in this movie was kind of a bit, you know, asexual, wasn't she?
She's like April O'Neil transported into this movie, right?
It's hard to get past the hair for both of them. Like the hair for both is horrible.
As Paul's son said, poofy hair.
Poofy hair. If you did manage to get past the hair, though, there was one thing that I had to point out that was amazing. Was I don't know if it was her dress for dinner or what it was, but that blue dress, the one that's like silk with the shoulder pads and the super huge belt. That made my day.
Yeah, it was an odd choice, since later on in the movie she looks good when she wears a normal dress. So
it's not that Leah, like, I mean, you know, I'm not the authority. That's obviously T, but it's not that Leah Ayers is lacking in the looks department. It's just
she's
a victim of the style of the times. She's a victim of the times.
It was a bad era.
Yeah, I don't, it was so bad. It was good. I'll say that.
That would be the description I would give to this whole movie. I mean, this is bad good. It's not bad like Valentine's Day Valentine's Day was kind of bad good. I forget the movie now that I said was just bad. So no, if you like the Rocky movies or anything with Sly Stallone or, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, this is your kind of film.
Yeah, if you're just a dude, then yeah, no shit, you're gonna like this. Sorry, Neil. But
how dare you?
I would like to take one moment and give a tip of the hat to JCVD for the amazing acting when Xiong Li reaches down to the junk area and pulls out the powder cyanide and whips it across his face, and then he does the like absolutely crazy like eyes and like
crazy eyes. Yeah,
I mean, like, how do you as a director or a writer or whatever, how do you write do this face? You couldn't. You need Jean-Claude to come up with that, to dig deep and make that happen. And that just tip of the hat for that.
That image of him with his googly eyes and mouth open is one of the iconic images from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He works very hard at his craft, doesn't he? Very hard.
Probably put that on his reel, on his audition tape. We mentioned the best actress in this movie is probably the Asian wife of the samurai master at the beginning, or the kung fu master at the beginning. A close second, of course, would be young Frank Dukes.
Young Frank.
Oh, my lord. Oh, I captured young a few clips of him. Let me see if I can pull those up. Oh, my God. I was going apeshit at that. Hold on. What did I do with it?
Here you go, Neil.
You're not going to call the cops?
I got a couple here.
You have fighting spirit.
You're not going to call the cops?
Not if we make a deal.
What kind of a deal?
What kind of a deal? He puts in loads of deal. There's loads of Y's in the middle of his sentence, his words, isn't he? Not going to call the cops?
Obviously, his voice was overdubbed because his mouth doesn't sync up with anything. I have a theory that it's actually Jean-Claude himself pretending to be young Jean-Claude.
Like Jackie Chan does in his movies, right? Dubs himself.
Yeah.
Teeb, I thought the same thing, that it sounded just like Jean-Claude was trying to impersonate himself as like a 9 or 10 year old, and they dubbed that in. Also confusing, young Frank is wearing a San Francisco Giants hat and a New York Giants shirt.
He just moved to America. He doesn't know baseballs. The weird part about young Frank. Well, so the scene when Jean-Claude comes to his old mistress's house and he's staring at her through the window and he's kind of glancing over at the sword, and he has this 30-minute flashback. When the kids were busting into the house to, you know, fiddle around with the sword, I thought that one of those other two kids was Jean-Claude because, you know, blonde hair, blue-eyed kids. And then it turns out this lumbering monster that trickles in after him is Jean-Claude. Young Frank is larger than old Frank.
Also, doesn't young Frank have black hair?
He does, yeah.
Young Frank might be based on the real Frank Dux, then, because that's exactly what he looks like. He's a big, huge guy with black hair. So
this will shock you, but young Frank is Pierre Raffini. Never acted again after this film.
Oh, maybe such a shame. So he's a Frenchie then. Why did they dub him? I don't understand.
I checked out his IMDb page, and I did see that this was his only acting credit and the one he should have won an Oscar for, but. I looked at his message board on IMDb. There's only like one or two topics, and then the one on top is titled, "Is he retard?"
I don't think that's good for us to laugh at.
No, I didn't laugh. Oh, dear.
What kind of a deal?
Oh, dear.
See, Neil, how could you not? How would you not enjoy this?
I didn't. At what point did I say I didn't enjoy it? I enjoyed it ironically, like a big hipster. I don't know. I saw this actually for the first time, I think, about 2 years ago, and I don't think I wrote anything up on it. I should have pulled your quote actually, because you actually watched it last year, John, and you talked about it on this podcast. But I don't remember what you said. I should have pulled it up really. You probably just said you loved it unironically, right?
Yes, of course I did, because it is awesome. I also, when you played the intro music, you totally took my quote. It's like, ow!
Well, the one about the dickhead or something.
Yes. I ain't your buddy, dickhead.
What about, did you guys like the 10-minute hijinks film that's in the... in this film with, somehow with there's like a, yeah, there's like an art, there are some army guys out to get him. And, you know, in the middle of the movie, after we've seen Chun Li kill some people, essentially, you know, we have a scene where they're chasing Jean-Claude Van Damme over some boats, and oh no, it fell in. Oh, that wily, yeah. That wily fighter gave him the slip.
There was a scene. They're like in an alley or somewhere, and they try to zap him with their
tasers,
and then they give up for whatever reason. He says, "Don't bother," and they went, "Okay, fine." And then they just decide they do give up, and they decide to pop over to see the illegal death fight. Why? they didn't have anything better to do in Hong Kong. They just, "Oh, let's go and see this legal death fight and or death contest and watch a few people get murdered." Sit in the bleachers and have a laugh.
People don't get murdered at these fights.
Didn't that big huge guy murder like two people?
One out of every maybe 1,000 fights, somebody might die. But that's, you know, they're not watching just like, oh, it's not Mortal Kombat. They're not doing fatalities on these guys.
They suspend their life. I mean, not killing.
Aren't they? They must be like military police, right, John? This is probably the, you know, the recognized behavior of military police, right?
No.
They're the independent contractors hired by the military. Why are they chasing him? I don't remember them ever going over
because
this.
Because he's far too valuable for the army to give him up, right, John?
They were worried about him getting hurt because they had spent so much time and money in his training that they were worried about getting hurt, which I could see this. Like, there's no way in hell an active duty service member would be allowed to fight in a tournament like this. I don't even know about, I'm not even sure about UFC. I would imagine you're probably not allowed to do that. But it gets kind of, close because, you know, there's jujitsu tournaments and things like that. And the whole point of a jujitsu tournament would be to get someone to tap out. It's not a whole, for the most part, they're non-striking, which means you can't punch people in the face, but you still try to do pretty much everything you're trying to do at a UFC, take them down to the ground and pull their arm until they eventually give up.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, you were a wrestler. Was that in high school? Was that in college as well as high school?
I wrestled in high school, and then in college, we had intramural tournaments, so like I didn't really practice or whatever. I just showed up to the tournaments and I wrestled in the intramural tournaments. And then I did a bunch of stuff in the military because we have to do MCMAP. And then when I was in Iraq, I did jujitsu and some other stuff.
What's MCMAP?
Yeah, Marine Corps Martial Arts Program.
Okay.
So basically, they take all kung fu, jiu-jitsu, they take all the different martial arts forms and then they kind of put a little bit of a combat slant on it and then call it MCMAP. So there's a lot of stuff that we do that you would very much recognize.
Mm. Yeah, that's where they actually allow you to put a powder tablet in your belt to use on the enemy.
It's legally, it is not allowed at any point to touch your junk. So as long as you can keep it junk suspended, you're good.
Well, they're kind of missing a trick if they didn't teach you to run around and on your knuckles and punch someone in the balls. Or do they do that? Maybe it's a top secret you can't tell us.
I'm not even allowed to comment on that.
cheeky monkey style.
It does seem odd that they have a ref in the ring. I don't know why he's there, though, since apparently it's okay to punch someone in the balls. It's clear.
Is he really a ref, though? He's just kind of like pointing at guys, like saying, okay, you're fighting him, and go.
I guess, but he sticks around for the whole fight. At one point, Chung Li uses him as a shield and tries to get Jean-Claude to punch him instead when he's blinded.
Jean-Claude uses him as a springboard.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He started it.
But he's not a very good referee because, like, there's some people that, like, there's that one dude that's just, like, beating the shit out of that guy. And then the referee comes down to, like, check on the guy, like, see if he's done. And the guy just throws the referee off and beats the shit out of him some more. Mm-hmm. So, not a good referee is what I'm saying.
That's a good point.
Yeah, he kind of doesn't call the fights. To win the fight, you either have to, what do you have to do? Get him to say, Mite or something, and then, or get knocked out of the ring or die. That's the three ways you can lose, right? And
yeah,
guys are obviously unconscious laying there on the ground, and he's just letting the guy keep pounding on him.
What was the deal with the fighting surface? It's not exactly a ring, was it? But they it was kind of curved at some points, wasn't it? Or was it curved all the way through? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think so. But it is weird that they have it like a ramp. It's not like all flat. Yeah, it's not all flat. Mm. Yeah, I don't understand the point of that.
Maybe it's so they could just throw people off it and it looked good. I don't know what the reason for that was.
By the way, did you guys see the YouTube video of the good referee? Mm-mm. Okay, you must not see it. So they, a good referee, like there's this dude who's obviously like a martial artist. He's the referee. And then these two students are like, or, you know, people who are competing are like punching each other. And he gets there and there to stop them. And the one guy like lands an extra punch and the referee pushes him back and like kicks the dude in the face and drops him. And then the other guy runs at him to like punch him some more now that he's on the ground. And the referee knocks that dude on his ass. That's what a referee should be doing.
Oh, by the way, so I read up a little bit on the real Frank Dukes.
Mm-hmm.
Full of shit, apparently.
Well, here's the interesting thing about that is that on first glance, that's what it kind of looks like. I guess, did you read the LA Times article, Steve?
Are you talking about the one from the 80s? Or?
Yeah, 88, yeah.
I did not because I think it's well known now that there's no way he could substantiate any of what he's saying. And it also seems ridiculous that there would be this prominent fighting tournament every 5 years and it's a secret.
The LA Times article is kind of a hit piece on him. And in a way you read it, the first time I read it, it's like, oh Jesus Christ, what is this going about? Then I watched there's this documentary in quotes called Put Up Your Dukes, which is all about Frank Dukes. And it really is from his point of view. And you kind of feel a bit sorry for him because that article kind of ruined his life. But then again, depends how you look at it. Like if that, you know, I mean, you're right, is that none of those claims about him going to this secret tournament and knocking 500 people out and all this sort of stuff, none of that can be substantiated. There's not a single person who can corroborate. Can you feel sorry for him or is he getting his just desserts? I don't know.
Well, I think one way all con men work is that you can feel sympathetic for them. Like people feel sad about Jason Blair now. And like he's, you know, he was just flat out making things up. And the same with Stephen Glass, to quote people from my own profession who were just making up articles. Like they survive for so long in a way because they are charismatic.
No sympathy for them because they're ripping people off and making their living out of it. It's not the least bit ethical, isn't it? Especially for a journalist.
No. And Frank, you know, Frank seems to be the same thing. He just was making up the fact that he was this hardcore badass fighter. And I don't know, did he ever actually have professional fights?
Well, this is, okay, so there are a bunch of stories that are hard to prove or have or corroborate, but John, this is one for you maybe, is that he claimed to be in special forces and his records show in quotes that he said he went to like Russia and Ukraine and parts of Asia and what have you. And this is again a quote from the LA Times. Military records show that Dukes never ventured closer to Southeast Asia than San Diego. His only known war injury occurred when he fell off a truck he was painting in the motor pool. So,
well,
yeah,
I will say people do fall off trucks and get injured. So that does sound realistic. But at the same time, like if he was special forces and he went those places, you would not be able to get those records.
That's the thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because if you look at the LA Times article on face value, it's like, oh wow, this guy's talking rubbish. Because most of those trivia facts come from that. But yeah, it's a good point. Well, how can you corroborate something that's a secret? But you know, the documentary is amazing. It's just it looks ridiculous. He kind of dresses up a bit like sort of James Bond, and he's on some kind of daytime TV show, a bit like sort of Maury Povich or something. And he goes on saying, I'm this super spy. And then a woman in the audience stands up and says, if you're a super spy, why are you telling us this? You can't be a super spy for revealing your identity. And he's like, oh, well, yeah, I was dying when I wrote this book. And he's got all these very convenient excuses about why X and Y happened. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's all a bit suspicious at the very least.
Well, I mean, it's a classic catch 22. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, like what are you going to do? Most of the time, the only thing you can really do is find one of his teammates, squad mates, whatever, you know, a guy that was kind of like out there with you to kind of corroborate the story. But even then, like, so if you went somewhere as part of a unit that it wasn't publicized, like say you and I did this, Neil, if the record is classified, you're not allowed to say, oh right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, John and I definitely did that, you know, because that would be classified. And just because you're out doesn't mean you're no longer part of the services, does not mean all of a sudden things stop being classified.
Right.
So,
well,
I don't know.
In the documentary, there are a couple of people who looked to me slightly suspicious, or not suspicious, like I was a bit wary of them. And I've just sent you a picture. We'll post this picture of, and this guy is supposed to be a rear admiral. And there were some things that really sort of concern me. I don't know what you think, John.
Yeah, we can talk about a couple things right now. Like one, keep in mind when you get to, so a rear admiral, that is the equivalent of a general.
Right.
In the Marine Corps. So that is somebody who's way high up there. Now, generally, like...
Well, okay, sorry to interrupt. It's either, they either said rear admiral or admiral. I can't remember, and I didn't get the caption. I got a caption for another guy, actually, but it's either admiral or
it doesn't
rear
matter.
Admiral. Right, okay.
All the admirals are equivalent to all the generals. So, I mean, like, if you made it up there, you're a big deal. But, like, to be that high up, like, he does not have very high personal awards. Which is very strange. Mm-hmm. His warfare designators, the pins that he has there, are not aligned. His uniform's disheveled, and he's not shaved. Plus,
that's what I was thinking too. He's got a mark on his lapel there. Do you see that?
Yeah, that's what I meant by disheveled. And then his cover's all jacked up. Like, so if you guys, this makes great pod, by the way. But well, if you're looking at...
You've described it very well. He looks really, really iffy, doesn't he? He doesn't
look right. And just looking at that cover right there. So there's a metal thing that goes inside. So if you look all the way at the top of his hat, see all the like the little dimples of like non-straightness or whatever? No, like people would flip their shit. Mm-hmm. And if you're an admiral... You have like basically people to go around, get your coffee, do your uniforms, whatever. Like,
yeah,
that's I'm giving this one 4.5 shenanigans out of 5.
Now, if he was retired, would he still wear that same uniform? Let's assume he's retired.
Technically, you could, yeah.
Would you though? If you're being interviewed,
no. Well, maybe if you're even then, there's kind of some like, and I don't even know them that well because, people aren't exactly interviewing me on a regular basis. But there are some kind of strict rules about what you're allowed to use your uniform for. Mm-hmm. So you're not allowed to use your uniform for anything that would show or connote U.S. government approval for things. So like, I'm not allowed to do a march for whatever cause and wear my uniform,
right?
Because that would kind of denote that the government was supporting my march. So, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it, you know, I guess it all depends on what it's for, but It like you said, it seems really iffy.
Now there's
lots of reasons.
There's another picture I've just sent, which is, I don't think this is less suspicious, but it's this guy who was talking about Frank Dukes' military record. And I don't know if there's anything that jumps out.
That dude looks a bit young to be talking about that, don't you think?
Hmm. And where is he? Is he in an official capacity? Because if you were going to talk about that, if he was currently serving, he'd have to be in an official capacity, wouldn't it? Looks like he's in his house.
Not necessarily.
No?
No.
Okay. I think the Admiral guy really sort of took it over the edge. And there's a bunch of, in the documentaries, a bunch of these, and it's like, really? Seriously? And they interview like Russian generals and Ukrainian generals, and like, what the hell are you talking about? Anyway, so I don't want to go too much into that, but... that's what you were talking about, Steve, there.
I don't think he's credible at all. Like,
no.
Now that being said, it still makes for a great movie. This is still a good yarn.
Mm.
I mean, Rocky wasn't real either. So, Oh, and speaking of, since we haven't done movies we talked about recently,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask John if he's heard that they're making a movie called Creed, and it's going to be about Apollo Creed's son, and Rocky is going to train him.
Really?
Yes.
Is he going to have like a bunch of flashbacks where like his brain's all battered and like he's training the son, but he thinks it's his dad?
I don't know, but sign me up.
Or did I just spoiler alert?
It's apparent. I believe it's supposed to be Michael B. Jordan as Apollo Creed Jr.
Okay. Neil, spoiler, Apollo Creed gets killed in Rocky IV.
I've seen all the Rockies. Actually, I think it was one of the people on here. Was it UTV who hadn't seen the Rockies? I've seen all the Rockies.
What?
I know about the Rockies through osmosis and, you know, paying attention to Family Guy and stuff like that.
But, Teeb, of all people, how have you not seen the Rockies?
I don't know. I've seen Bloodsport plenty of times, but not Rockies.
Have you heard what Apollo Creed Jr., what his name is? Adonis Creed. Now that is
nice.
That is so stupid.
Sexy
Paul. Adonis, come on.
Adonis Johnson Creed. November 2015, it's currently on the schedule for. So get your tickets now.
Good God.
There is some pretty deep foreshadowing in this movie. Obviously, a lot of thought put into the story when Jean-Claude and Randy Jackson were playing that arcade game, and Randy Jackson kept getting the shit kicked out of him.
Mm.
That fighting game is called
Karate Champ.
What was it? Champ? Karate Champ? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. I was trying to place it when we were watching it. I didn't recognize it. It's no Yi-Yar Kung Fu, is it?
They're just jiggling. They're jiggling the joysticks around, and yeah, kind of weird. I like when people are playing video games in movies and TV shows, and they're obviously not playing the game. like for example, in the 2000s and I guess it's around starting in the PlayStation era, when people would be playing a video game, pushing all the buttons. They're pushing every single button they can push on the controller, and they're playing some like racing game. And I love like the sounds from the systems that they're playing are like old Pac-Man sounds.
Oh,
they're playing
absolutely,
360.
Yeah. They're holding like an Xbox 360 controller, and here you're hearing Space Invader noises. Like, what game are they playing?
Right.
What the fuck is that? One of the only sort of pieces of media where they really got it right was in Spaced. Have you seen Space TV? They're playing Resident Evil. Which is fairly current at the time, I think. And not only are they generally playing it, or they appear to be, they then sort of enter the game as well, which is a lot of fun. They get sort of zoned into the game.
Reboot.
Mm. So you're saying you couldn't cope with Rocky or Spaced TV?
I've never tried Rocky. I will watch it someday.
How dare you?
I tried Space, but couldn't make it through.
How double dare you?
I'm not that much of a Simon Pegg guy. He's good in the Star Trek, the new Star Trek movies. But other than that, I mean, he's okay in Shaun of the Dead, but he's kind of annoying.
How triple dare you?
he's your country's new export. Like the height, you guys are super proud of him, right?
Well, certain things. I like Spaced and I like Shaun of the Dead. Hot Fuzz was okay. That new one he did about the sort of fantasist kind of, well, that was crap. A lot of the stuff he's done recently is pretty rubbish. So, I'm not in love with him. He's not my special friend.
He's like your version of Jack Black.
Mm, yeah. So his career's over then, that's what you're saying.
Yep. Oh, jeez.
Chun-Li, when he was, before every fight, he kind of, he blows his snot rockets all over the mat. You guys see that?
Yeah, but like nothing comes out. He blows, but it's just air, isn't it? What's the point of that?
Maybe he's what's it called? Not OCD, but he has, it's like in baseball, the pitchers like have to spit seven times before they throw the ball or something like that. Mm. And, or the batter has to tap each shoe seven times to, before he goes up to the plate. That's his thing, is he has to pretend like he's blowing snot rockets everywhere.
Timing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
The sanitary conditions do not seem good in the first. You have to go down the filthiest alley in the world to get to the ring. And then once you, people are like getting their brains splattered and blood is everywhere on the mat, and they just have a guy with a sponge, you know, wipe it down between matches.
And also to pick up the teeth, right?
Eating other people's teeth.
Oh God. Forgot about that part. Jesus. Listen, you gotta save on labor costs when you're putting down hosting underground death tournaments.
Well, that's Kumite Jr. Daddy Kumite is the one that runs the thing. Kumite Jr. is still working up his way up the ranks in the organization. He has to take the sponge out. Chun-Li, he always is so happy when he wins his fights. He's always clapping and laughing and jumping around. He seems like a nice, jolly guy, right?
Chun-Li has certain moments of levity. One moment of levity is the big smile and the teeny tiny arms up in the air, kind of jumping. And the other Chun-Li moment of levity is where he makes the boobies dance.
Yeah.
So it's really a sliding scale between
he's
like
he's the Brock Lesnar of Kumites. And I don't know why everybody doesn't like Ching Li is because he seems like he's a nice fighter. He's fighting in the parameters until that last fight when he took out the tablet, and we still don't even know that still might be a legal move in Kumite. When he seems to be following the rules, he beats them up until they say until they tap out, which they don't. So he just keeps beating on them and the ref isn't stopping the fight. He just keeps playing within the rules of the Kumite.
Well, I mean, we saw what happens when you don't Chun-Li in the first bout with Dukes. He put the dude down, and then Dukes didn't kill him, so he tried to hit Dukes in the back. So I think moral of the story is you just got to kill everybody.
It's probably the safest bet. If you can punch a guy and break his skull, they give you less hassle than if you win and just like make him unconscious for a little while.
Since you brought this up, though, I think my question to you would be, what's worse, Chun-Li killing the dudes, you know, and as we've discussed, mainly out of self-defense, not out of any animalistic instinct, what's worse, him just killing people, like using his hands, striking them, and pretty much killing them, or would it be Dukes, who just knocks people right the F out with a punch from, like, over a foot away, just intima-killing?
Yeah.
Dukes is portrayed as a kind of badass, but like good, like lawful good. Whereas I don't know, Chun-Li
is chaotic neutral.
Yeah, I it's weird, Brisket. I actually agreed with you. Like until the final fight, he doesn't really do anything underhanded, and you can argue that you know most of what he does is a reaction to what other people are doing, like. Yeah, he's a little rough on Ray Jackson, but Ray Jackson also taunted him before the first fight.
He called him out after Randy Jackson beat that first dude up. He pointed at him and said he's going to kill him.
Yeah,
that is true. And that first fight was pretty amazing. I like the take a shot. Oh, hold on a second. I'm going to hammer fist your face into the mat.
Yeah, he has Hulk Bruce Banner type power where he doesn't really start fighting until he gets punched first.
Well, I mean, sometimes you just gotta look badass. I mean, and the only way to do that is to get hit in the face, bleed a little bit over yourself and over the chesticle area, and then get the whole, like, you made me bleed. This is bull. And then wham, right to the face.
Mm-hmm.
As one does.
All right. Last note I have is just a little piece of trivia that I saw on IMDb. Jean-Claude does his trademark splits seven times in the movie.
Have you guys seen that? I think it's a fairly recent commercial where he's doing the splits between a couple of trucks. You seen that? What are they, like Volvos or something? I don't know what the ad is for. It's for trucks, obviously, but I know who it's
I
for.
Believe they are Volvos. But did you see the answer to that?
Probably. Remind us.
This is shocking to me that people are not seeing this. So, you know, you got Jean-Claude doing the epic splits, and then a certain Chuck Norris decided to respond. So just Google, just go into YouTube, type in epic splits, and I think you'll get what you need.
All right. What does he do? Tell us anyway.
He does splits between airplanes with people bouncing on his head.
John Norris is like, he's like...
With a hat on, with a Texas Ranger hat on.
I think ironically, he's got a walker now, isn't he? He's not that well, is he? He must be about 80 now.
I'm not sure about 80? That, but he actually, when I was in Iraq, he came out to see us. Oh, wow. So this is in 2007, so long time ago. Not only did he come out to see us, which was awesome, he is not a very large man.
No, he's tiny, yeah.
Keep in mind, I am not a very large man, and I looked at him, I'm like, that is a small dude. And he was pretty old in 2007.
Well, think about his breakthrough role was in the early 70s in a Bruce Lee movie. So that's when, and he was already like 30 at that point.
That was like 73, 72. It was early 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Enter the Dragon, was it, I guess?
I don't think it was Enter the Dragon. Yeah. It was another one.
Teeb has really been slacking on the top five lists.
Well, okay, let's rank him in this movie.
Who were the hottest men in this movie? Take it away, Deep.
We got April O'Neil.
Men, not women.
Oh, who am I, Jackie? I'm not superficial. There's not like enough Jackie.
Women. There's not enough women to rank.
Whoa, that's my wife.
She only cares about how men look. She doesn't care about their personalities or their senses of humor.
Yeah,
that's true.
In a way, that's more flattering for John.
I'm okay
That's
with
true,
it.
Yeah. And second, we have Master Splinter's wife.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? You can't just have two. You got to have. No, rate the men. Oh, I guess you don't want to do that. You're some kind of homophobia.
Hey, Dave, can you get the drop
already,
for that?
I already said Jean-Claude has a nice little bum bum on him. Okay.
Now I said Chuck Norris was about 80, and people are scoffing. He's 75. It's not far off, is he?
Jesus, that's a huge.
No, I wasn't scoffing at you being wrong. I was scoffing at like that's old.
Yeah.
Especially to be doing the splits between airplanes with people on your head.
I'm looking at his first film actually. It was Way of the Dragon. You're right, actually, T. Not Enter the Dragon. 72. Yeah. So yeah, he was 32 when he did that. Not a young man.
So he was born in 1940? 1940, is my math correct there?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty old.
Yeah.
You're an old dude.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure he is walking with a walker. A walker. A Texas Ranger walker.
Walker.
Right?
Texas Ranger.
Okay, so that's all we have time for this week. You can follow us on Twitter at DFSMC Podcast. If you'd like to hear about upcoming movies, check out compendiapodcast.com if you're into indie movies. And my thanks this week go to the Dime for Scale Movie Club members, Todd Brisket.
Look, guys, I know there's a secret full contact event being held in Hong Kong in the next few days. So if you could tell me where that is, that'd be just great.
Thanks to J-Ville John.
You break my record. Now I break you like I break your friend.
And thank you to Stephen Greenwell.
Hey, baby. Want to go out with a real big man? No? Too handsome for you, honey.